truth be told, or your bullshit getting old. The world is getting cold. Don't nobody owe you nothing, so quit fronting. Nothing wrong with being honest. It's a lot of broken promises. Truth be told, we could communicate without all the gun violence. All it took was one conversation. It'll prevent a whole lot of altercation.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Truth Be Told. Today, I have a legendary voiceover specialist, author, singer, announcer, actor, and podcaster, Rodney Salisbury. Rodney, how are you today?
I'm fine, James. How are you?
Very, very good. Thank you, man. It's an honor and privilege to have you on the show.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Looking forward to speaking with you today.
All right. Awesome. Well, I got some questions for you whenever you're ready.
I'm ready.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I noticed you grew up in Detroit, Michigan. So what was it like growing up in Detroit? And what did you study at the University of Michigan?
Well, it was great growing up in Detroit because Detroit is so rich with music, and Motown was there, Berry Gordy and the Temptations and the Four Tops and Smokey Robinson and the Miracles. So there was music in the air, a lot of talented people around, a lot of people standing on street corners singing, people harmonizing. You could go out of your house and just go on any corner and hear some guys singing. And so that was nice. I would just stand there. I was a little guy, so no one would let me join, but I would listen. And I felt like I learned a lot about harmony and stuff like that, and blending, and what the baritone does, and the bass singer, and the alto singers, and the second tenors. And then, of course, Eddie Kendricks was around with that falsetto. So I learned about things like that. I went to high school and started doing musicals. I was Tony in West Side Story. I was Sky Masterson in Guys and Dolls. And I was Billy Bigelow in Carousel at a high school called Henry Ford High School. So I just was always around a lot of music. When I graduated from high school, I went to the University of Michigan, and I actually went there on a singing scholarship. I was singing opera, classical singer. Started out at a place called Interlochen one summer before I went to the University of Michigan. Interlochen is a great camp in Traverse City, Michigan, where we all had on corduroys and knickers, as a matter of fact. And and the squirrels used to walk around and just walk down the street with us. Birds would actually land on our shoulders. It was out in the woods. We would be in cabins playing violins and cellos and pianos and singing. It was just a real musical forest, so to speak. And from there, I went to the University of Michigan, like I said, studying opera. I became sort of discouraged by opera because I was told that the classical singer, the opera singer, his voice doesn't mature until he's in his 40s. And if you're a young man of 18 and 19, and someone tells you that you can't experience success in a particular genre until you're about 40 years old, that seems like the thing you need to get out of. And so I ended up transferring into the School of Education and got my degree in education. Taught school when I first got out for about a half a year. Taught junior high school in the inner city on the east side in Detroit. And got out of there too and ended up getting in a musical called Your Arms Too Short to Box with God. The show came to Ann Arbor. I was visiting my girlfriend at the time, who is now my wife, who was in the pharmacy program. And so we were both there at the same time, but her program was a 5-year program. Mine was a 4. I had graduated. But I came back to watch that play. I went backstage during intermission and talked to some people and told them about the fact that I was a singer and an actor. And the stage manager said, as a matter of fact, we're looking for a replacement in this show, this traveling show, Your Arms Too Short to Box with God. Can you come back and sing a song for us when the show is over? I did come back and I sang, I Was Born on the Day Before Yesterday from The Wiz. And I ended up getting hired right there. And the next trip, or the next place that they had to go after Ann Arbor, was Indianapolis. And I found myself in Indianapolis, In Your Arms Too Short to Box with God, the national tour. And that's how I got out of Detroit, out of Ann Arbor, and eventually landed in Los Angeles.
Wow, that's incredible. I'd love to walk down the street and have birds land on my shoulder.
Wouldn't that be something? Yeah, and we weren't afraid of them, man. Everybody was friendly. The squirrels were friendly. It was quite an atmosphere.
That definitely sounds like, you know, like a dream almost. Now,
yes.
You got to work with the legendary Stanley Clarke. What was that like?
That was wonderful. Yeah, I ended up getting a record deal with a company called Allegiance Records, and it was sort of a co-produced type thing. So they were producing and I was producing and they were paying and my production company was paying. And we started trying to figure out who we could get to produce the album. And Stanley Clarke came to mind, and I approached him and let him hear some of the songs that were going to be on the album. And he was into it. And we negotiated and came up with something that he would take to produce that album. And that's how I got Stanley Clarke. And it was wonderful.
One of your first acting credits is for the show Taxi, which, for anyone listening, that's a great show and you should definitely check it out. What was it like working with such a star-studded cast early on?
It was great. You know, I've had some great experiences, and that was a heck of a story. I happened to be on the Paramount lot auditioning for Happy Days, and I read for Happy Days, and the casting director was happy with what I did, but they said that I was a little too tall to play opposite the Fonz in this particular scene. And so they said, thank you so much for coming. And of course, we will call you again for different roles down the line. So you're on the Paramount lot. You've just got in town. You've arrived from your national tour with Your Arms Too Short to Box with God. The show is closed. You got an agent. And this is one of your first auditions, and you're on the Paramount lot. So I'm not going to just leave after that audition. I've got my attaché case full of pictures and resumes, and I am going to make the best of this opportunity and make sure that I get my picture and resume on the desks of some other casting directors there for other shows. So I'm going into offices and I'm just dropping my stuff off. You know, I'm just leaving it there. You know, every time I would go into a place, no one was there. I'd just leave my thing on the desk. And I wandered onto the set of Taxi. And they were doing what you call a table read. So everyone was sitting around the table with the director, James Burrows, directing them. And everybody was reading the script. And all of a sudden, I'm standing there, and Tony Danza sees me, and he gets up, and he comes over to me, and he pushes me. He's got a playful look on his face, and he pushes me again, and he puts up his dukes, so to speak. I don't know if you're old enough to know what dukes are, but it's raising your fists, right? And I put my bag down, and I put my dukes up. And we started to spar, slap box, they call it. And we did that for a few seconds there. And he stopped and he said, Jim, that's the guy. And Jim, James Burrows, said, Tony, come on, sit down, man. Let's finish this read. He says, no, I'm telling you, that's the guy. The next thing I knew, I was upstairs in James Brooks' office signing a contract to play Carl the Boxer in an episode called Alex Jumps Out of an Airplane. And it was titled that because Alex was doing all of these things that he wanted to do in life. Jump out of airplanes, climb a high mountain, box. And so he was boxing me, a professional boxer. The scene opens up with me on a heavy bag, and Tony Danza and Judd Hirsch walk over to me, and they want me to spar with Judd Hirsch. And it's funny because when I first got the part, I told them a bunch of fibs, so to speak. I told them that I had boxed in the Golden Gloves, right? I told them that I had worked out at Kronk Gym with Tommy Hearns in Detroit. I told them all types of things, right? And so when the scene was first set up, I was directed to start off on the speed bag. Well, you can fake a lot of things, but you can't fake the speed bag. So Tony, who was so cool, Tony Danza, he was on to me. So he comes over and he says, look, don't worry. I'm going to get you off the speed bag. And so as if you notice, when the scene opens up, I'm on the heavy bag. Well, who can't hit a heavy bag? And the way the scene goes is that I get in the ring with Judd Hirsch, and we box. And at some point, he's sort of messing around. And I stop and I say, hey, man, you want to box or not? So now he gets serious and we box and we box and I knock him out. Yeah. Oh,
man. That's incredible.
Isn't that something? And that was my first role. And I went on to do, I think that same year, MASH. And so I'm on one set with Tony Danza, Judd Hirsch, Danny DeVito, and then I'm on another set with Alan Alda. So, you know.
And that's incredible, actually. Yeah. And, you know, yeah. That kind of leads me to my next question is, you know, what is it like mentally to prepare going from, like, a lighthearted role from Taxi to, like, a more gritty role in a TV miniseries like A Rumor of War?
Wow. That's really, really a stretch. And the fact that we had to travel to Puerto Vallarta and be in this foreign country. And again, one of my first roles, and to be there for some time, to be spending time there, eating the food, getting involved in the culture. It was tough. And you know, fighting in the battlefields and going through mud and carrying heavy rifles with backpacks. And Hollywood makes it real. You know, they make it as real as they can. The boots, the tanks, the friendly fire, right? It was tough.
Now, later on, you performed hit singles I Wonder and Look What You Done on Soul Train. How did the opportunity for that performance come about? And what was it like to share the stage with the great Don Cornelius?
It was wonderful. I grew up watching Soul Train, again, seeing some of my favorite stars. I'll never forget Marvin Gaye on Soul Train, the Soul Train line, right? I had the record out, I Wonder. It was doing very well at the time. And someone at Allegiance Records had a relationship with Don Cornelius. And Don said yes. And so there I was on the show. And what really excited me about that experience is that they knew my song. They knew I Wonder. And so you could see the dancers in the audience singing along with me. And that's a wonderful feeling when you put a record out, to know that it's well received and that people have actually taken the time to learn it. And a lot of people know it and they're singing it. And then to talk to Don, you know, you talk about voiceovers. What a voice. Now, at that time, I didn't know anything about voiceovers, so I wasn't thinking, wow, Don should be doing voiceovers and so should I. But when I look back at it in retrospect, it's like, what a voice, you know. Don Cornelius would have been a great voiceover artist. as well as the great host that he was on Soul Train.
Such a unique sounding voice.
Yes, yes.
You know, that actually leads me to my next question, too. As somebody who's known for plenty of voiceovers themselves, including Static X, Rugrats, iReal Monsters, Avatar, and most notably Spider-Man, what was it like playing the fantastic Joseph Robbie Robertson, and when did you really start getting into voices yourself?
It was a lot of fun playing Joey. I think the thing that made Joey so much fun is that, you know, when you get into characters, character voices, like I think about my Zatarain's Jazz Man from the Zatarain's commercials, it's a different sound. It's a different physical approach, using the diaphragm, sort of rubbing the vocal cords together, a little more strain, always in control because my classical background, my operatic background, always taught me how to use my voice, how to breathe properly. And voiceover is analogous to music, I think. I think every time you sing a song or do a character, or every time you read a script, you're singing a song. Okay. And then interpretation is involved in music too. In interpreting a song, you have to interpret copy. You have to interpret a character. So Joe Robbie was very close to my voice. And the only difference was I spoke in a higher key. Again, getting back to that musical analogy, right? Keys, like speaking low, singing low, speaking high, singing high, you know what I'm saying? Higher. So Joey was really, Joe Robbie was really Rodney in a higher key, almost like Rodney in his freshman year at college or something. You know what I mean? But he was a lot of fun. He was a lot of fun. And I enjoyed working with that cast. You know, that was a time when, well, actually, that still exists, I think, for the most part in animation, where we're all there in the studio at the microphone. You know, now the business has changed where I work 95% from at home. But it used to be that we actually went to the studios, and that was a lot of fun. But with animation, you still go. And all of us are in the studio around those microphones. And to be there with the likes of Ed Asner, the late Roscoe Lee Brown, just a bunch of wonderful stars, it was a great experience.
In talking about recording, what's the difference between recording for, you know, a cartoon as opposed to like a video game?
There is not much difference. The big difference is, depending on your role, it seems like a video game, my experience has been, is that they are always more physical and more challenging because, you know, you think about something like, I'll have to look at IMDb to see my own credits, but whenever I'm whenever I'm doing things where I'm being shot at or I'm shooting at people, and then I have to take the hit when I'm fighting, or I have to give the hit. So there's a difference between the sounds you make when you punch someone and the sounds you make when you receive a punch. And when you have directors that are very demanding in that you actually go through the physical motions. So it's not just vocals that you're doing, but they want your body to move that way. I had one director, Chris Zimmerman. She's great. If I'm holding a rifle, then my hands have to be up like I've got a rifle in my hand. And through the glass, as she sits in that, you know, control room, looking through the glass, watching me in the studio, if she doesn't see me physically doing those things too, she will object to that. So I think video games are a little more taxing, all right? But That would probably be the difference.
Now, when working on the set of The Lion King, did you expect it to become as big and as popular as it did? And what is the atmosphere like working on a Disney film?
Well, the Disney situation that I had, two songs, Hakuna Matata and Circle of Life. Both times, it was just a session for me. You know, these were vocal sessions. So when you talk about the set, I actually sang on those soundtracks. So I just went into a studio. There were other singers there. I remember when we did Hakuna Matata, it was only about eight singers, right? And I didn't even leave the studio singing that song. I liked it, but it was just another session. Circle of Life, the same thing. That was a bigger choral type thing, a lot of people. But, you know, you just talked with the other singers during breaks and, you know, listened to the director tell you what they wanted, the choral directors and so forth, and I left. And so it was not a big deal at the time. And then I got my first check. And I said, wow, that was a big deal. So, sometimes you just don't know, you know, what a big hit, The Lion King.
I mean, yeah, they just did the live action version of it recently, too.
Isn't that something? Yeah, it's definitely a franchise. And I'm so glad to be a part of it. I was going to say have been a part of it. Yes, I was. But when you do these things, it's royalty, residual heaven, so to speak. So you're always a part of it.
And there's nothing like the original.
Isn't that something?
Now, you received two nominations in 2011 and 2012 for Outstanding Actor in a Daytime Drama Series for your role of Anthony on Bold and the Beautiful. Mm-hmm. What was it like doing a soap opera?
It was a lot of fun. And, you know, I've had a lot of experience in the soap opera world. One of my first contract roles was on CBS in a soap opera called Capital. And talk about stars. I was working with Rory Calhoun, Richard Egan, and some of the names sort of slipped my mind. But that was my first experience, and I played an FBI agent by the name of Jeff Johnson. And so there I was at CBS in Hollywood, the CBS building, working on a soap opera. So that was my first one. That was a big deal, you know. And then I went on to do The Young and the Restless, some short stints on that show, a few Days of Our Lives appearances. And a few years ago, the audition came up for this homeless guy on The Bold and the Beautiful. And I remember going in trying to find something that looked homeless. I had a Lakers hat. I had on some crazy clothes, but I had a Lakers hat on backwards. I never wear my baseball caps backwards, right? But I had it on backwards, and I had my guitar, and I went in and I sang. And I felt good. I felt really good about the audition. And then there were a few more auditions, and, you know, it started out with one number of guys, and then it came down to four guys, and then it was two guys, and then it was me. But one thing that sticks out for me is that I had an album out at that time. I had just released an album called Better Than Before. And I remember giving that album to the casting director. So she held on to it. And she gave it to the producer of The Bold and the Beautiful. And so after I got the role, it turned out that one of the storylines was written after one of my songs on that album called Miracles. And so I sang Miracles a number of times on the show. And then they used a lot of my music. And that was a great thing, too. So now you had me as an actor, and then you had me as a musician, And then you had me as a writer of music, and all of this stuff was going into the show. So now I had a chance to have multiple streams of income because The Bold and the Beautiful, for instance, is really big in Italy, right? So now your songs are being played over there and all around the world, right? And so it was a wonderful, wonderful experience. And then to get nominated for an NAACP Image Award, not once, but twice, was such a blessing. I am grateful to God for the opportunity to play such a role. I mean, here was a guy who was homeless. In fact, one of the scenes, a couple of the scenes that I think were responsible for, in fact, they were on the tape that they show at the NAACP Image Awards. We shot on Skid Row on two of the hottest days in history, right? And so I'm out there, and we're actually on Skid Row. They brought this homeless guy off the streets and into society, so to speak, working society, right? General society, cleaned him up. And then he started to work at Daisy's. Yeah. And I was singing and playing my guitar and working around that particular cafe, I think it was. And so it was a great experience. And there were a lot of, we got a chance to tackle the homeless issue, which of course hasn't gotten much better, especially here in Los Angeles.
Especially with, you know, as much space as there is in the world and as much like food is thrown away each year, it is sad.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, we have to address that and do something about it.
Now, you spoke on writing music for the show. You've also written three books. You Can Bank on Your Voice, Step Up to the Mic, and Rodney Salisbury's Tongue Twisters and Vocal Warm-Ups. Did you always have a passion for writing?
I did always have a passion for writing. And it turns out I always had a passion for voiceover, too, even though I didn't know how it was going to happen. But back in Detroit, I used to love to say, member FDIC, member FDIC. I don't know why. I just used to say that because I guess I would hear it, you know, Detroit Bank and Trust, member FDIC. So I ended up doing that. But anyway, I'm sorry. Can you ask that question again? I got to.
I was just saying, did you always have a passion for writing?
Oh, right. Yes. Writing books. Yes. And so I was so excited about how well my voiceover career was going. I just really got hot once it started rolling. And I was doing all of these commercials and I was doing all of these movie trailers from, I think my first one was Crooklyn, Spike Lee's Crooklyn. And then I did, How Stella Got Her Groove Back. That was a real nice one. And The Players Club and Friday After Next. I just started to do the whole franchise.
Yes.
And so I wanted to tell people about it. I wanted to let people know about this great business. So I wrote You Can Bank on Your Voice. And not only did I talk about how to get into voiceovers, I had anecdotes about things that were happening to me. I talked about the fade. Back then, the haircut that we would get would be short on the sides and sort of a flat top. And I was getting my hair cut. And my beeper went off. And so I had to leave because the way the beeper system worked with my agency, if you had one beep, it was kind of important. If you had two beeps, it was getting more important. And if you had three beeps, it was showtime. So I had to get up out of the barber chair and go with a half haircut. And so there's a story called The Fade. And then there was vanity plates where I had my license plate was A1 Voice. And so, you know, I was fortunate enough to have my nice Mercedes with A1 voice on it. And one day I pulled up in front of my agent's office and I saw this guy get out of his car and he's walking towards me as I'm putting my money in the meter. And it's a really famous piano player. I don't say his name in the book, and I still don't say his name. But anyway, I really wanted to meet him. So I'm like, hey, you know, I'm Rodney Salisbury, blah, blah. I enjoy your work. You know, he played for Stevie Wonder. He played for everybody. He's just a real hot cat. So he says to me, well, what do you do? And I said, well, I do voiceovers. And he looked down at my license plate and he said, and you want everybody to know it. And it was just the way that he said that. I don't know. It made me feel kind of weird, right? So I ended up changing my license. Now, I still have those plates in my garage, but I took those vanity plates off. So a lot of people tell me that I shouldn't have taken it that way, but I don't know. I took it that way. So you have stories like that. And people really liked that book. And they said, not only did you tell us how to get into voiceovers, we loved your positive attitude. So I said to myself, why don't I write a book that deals with being positive? So the second book was called
Step Up to the Mic.
Thank you. A positive approach to succeeding in voiceovers. And I got contributions from people like the late Don LaFontaine and Nancy Cartwright, letting me know what a positive attitude did in their careers. And so if you look in that book, you'll see sections where a lot of people are talking about how important it was to be positive. Well, this book transcended voiceover because you have to have a positive attitude in all of the businesses that you do. And in every place that you work, you need a positive attitude. So the book became successful not only with voiceover people, but with people in general, how important it is to have a positive attitude. Well, along the way, I got famous for my tongue twisters on YouTube, the tongue twisters in the first book, You Can Bank on Your Voice. And it got to the point where when I would do workshops around the country, people wouldn't greet me with a handshake. They'd hold their hand out and they'd say, why in the world would a whale want water? When a whale wants water, will a whale run dry? Why in the world would a wet whale want wet water? Will a wet whale want wet water when a wet whale runs dry? Bippity bumpity, rippity rumpity, bippity. So anyway, that's how they would greet me. So I said, I need a book that has nothing but tongue twisters, great pointers about voice care, vocal warm-ups, singing exercises, everything that it takes to get the voice ready to do voiceovers or just speak every day on your regular job. And my tongue twisters are going to be specific to genres. You got to do a trailer? Here's a trailer tongue twister. You got to do a promo? Here's a promo tongue twister. Narration, commercials, voice prompts, animation, video games. There are tongue twisters and vocal exercises for all of those things in this book. And You Can Bank on Your Voice was a big book. Step Up to the Mic, big book. Tongue twisters, wow. Wrote this thing in 2015. And you would think that I just released it yesterday. I mean, it is hot, 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 continuously. And I really appreciate that. And I urge everyone out there, if you don't have that book, to go grab it.
Now, you've also had some success in podcasting with the show actually called Success Talks. What was the inspiration behind this show?
I love podcasts, you know. This is why I'm doing yours, and I've done a lot of them. I think it's a great medium. I think it's a great outlet. It's a chance to get your voice out there, to get your message out there. There are things that you can use that will release them. I forget the name of the one that I'm on right now. It's just a chance to be out there weekly, monthly, right? To get your voice out. And I started out doing what you're doing right now, having guests, and I'm sure I'll go back to that. That's the beauty of the podcast. You can do whatever you want to do. But lately, I've just been celebrating the careers of some of my most favorite people, you know, famous people, and maybe not famous, just people in general that I admire and that I think the public should know about. And so I've done short. My podcasts are anywhere from 4 to 12 to 13 minutes celebrating the careers of famous people, important people like Berry Gordy. I mean, again, when I talk about I have to look at IMDb, I'd have to go look at the list of all the people that I've done. And I also have included a lot of voiceover stuff there, a lot of educational things and business things and teachers and ministers and all types of people in all walks of life that I think have a contribution to society, getting back to that word society, that needs to be talked about and celebrated.
And is there any advice you could give to any aspiring voiceover artists?
Yes. My advice would be, if it's something that you want to do, make sure that you study first. Make sure that it's something that you want to do by studying and having a coach take you through the paces. I think it's important to read books. Read my books. You Can Bank on Your Voice, Step Up to the Mic, Tongue Twisters and Vocal Warm-Ups. Read other books so you can get different perspectives on the business. Take an acting class. Take a voiceover class. Take an improvisation class. Take a singing class. Join my consultants club. This is a chance for me to help people who want to get into voiceovers. My consultants club is a situation where you would have a subscription. You would be paying me monthly to consult you for 30 minutes a month. I'll send you scripts. So we'll work on commercial copy, promo copy. If you want to work on marketing, we'll do that. If you want to talk about home studio, whatever it is, I have students that have been with me for 3 and 4 years who have become very successful under my tutelage. And so that's what I would say. I would say study and be passionate about it. If you don't have passion for something, you really can't do it. You just cannot do it if you're not passionate about it. If you go after anything half-cocked, it won't be like, you know, being in it in a hole. You know what I'm saying? Whole is better than half when it comes to trying to succeed in voiceovers. I've never met a hard worker who wasn't successful. And if you have a hard work ethic and you have talent, it's a lethal combination and you just can't go wrong. You can't.
Rodney, you're a legend, a positive influence on the world, and a wonderful human being. Man, it's been an honor and a privilege to have you on the show. Now is usually the time where I have people just kind of let everyone know any upcoming projects they have going on and where they can reach them. I know you kind of covered that, but if there's anything else that you want to let us know.
Mm-hmm. Well, on November 4th, I'm doing a seminar, a 1-hour seminar for beginners only. And it's an hour on the telephone. We're all on the phone. And people all over the country and throughout the world are on this call. And you get a chance to read copy for me. You get a chance to be critiqued by me. You get a chance to hear how to get started in voiceovers, hear about how to get an agent, home studio. I talk about all these things. This happens on November 4th. You can go to my website at rodneysalisbury.com, rodneysalisbury.com, and sign up for that. I have a more advanced promo trailer teleclass, 3-week, coming up. I think it starts December 2nd, and it meets for 3 Mondays. So December 2nd, December 9th, I think it is, and December 16th, where we get into how to interpret promo and trailer copy. And you're going to be reading for me then, and you're going to get a workbook. You get a workbook, too, for the beginner's class, something that I send you via email. So I encourage you to sign up for those teleclasses, and you can go to my website at rodneysalisbury.com to do that. I also encourage you to join the Consultants Club. And again, you can find that on my website. The Consultants Club gives us a chance to work together on a continual basis where I'm working with you. And anytime that you decide you don't want to do it anymore, you just go to PayPal and you cancel your membership. But I think it's something that you should take a look at. I think it's very valuable and it's reasonable. I came up with the Consultants Club because if you study with me for 30 minutes or if you study for me for an hour and you're not in those clubs, it's very expensive. So I wanted to come up with something that was affordable to more people. And that's why I started the Consultants Club. Oh, and one last thing. Look for my Christmas album. Speaking of music, I did an album called Christmas with Rodney Salisbury, which will go on sale November 1st. So make sure you get that. Some of my favorite Christmas songs, and I'm sure they're your Christmas songs too. I'm playing guitar and singing. It's raw. It's acoustic and it's wonderful, man. So check it out.
And so now you all have no excuse not to check that out. And of course, as always, I'm your host, James C. Turner Jr. And you can find me on Twitter at JPZolliday1990 and James C. Turner Jr. on Instagram. Thank you guys for tuning in. Rodney, thank you again for coming on the show. And be sure to tune in next week.
Nothing but positive vibes all day. Grinding, trying to make a better way. Better listen to what the songs say. Truth be told, you better slow your roll. I've been on the same road before. You know I'm the chosen one. I spit flows from the brain. Young G1.